Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, shadow runners of all ages. We're coming back for some more shadow running on empty, delicious lore to fill your brains. I am your host as usual, So Easy Mode, the lore guy, bringing you all of it as much as I can, as much as I can find and digest. Bring it to your ears. Tonight I have my usual co-host, Austin. Austin, how are you doing this evening?
Doing good. Ears ready for lore as usual.
Fantastic. And now for something a little bit different this evening, we have a new guest with us that's going to be joining us on the podcast for the foreseeable future, I hope.
Maybe.
Until we scare him off, yeah. None other than the GM of a lovely podcast known as an absolute Drekstorm of a podcast. You know him. You love him. He plays also on our Sinless show and then runs his runners through crazy, ridiculous scenarios on his own show. Karma Harry.
I'm doing good. You know, I just got out of being the... So, you know, I'm feeling pretty good. Oh, wait, can I say that yet? I don't know if this episode was released in time.
I don't know about that.
Maybe
there's
going to
be
out.
A large beep that some people are going to hear just now, and it's not because... It's definitely not because the first thing that Karma said on this podcast was him spoiling a major plot point of the end of season two of Sinless. Definitely not
that's
the reason why.
My bad.
Definitely not what just happened.
Definitely not. Yeah, that's not what just happened, you guys. Ignore
technical
that
difficulties.
Long...
It was all technical difficulties. Technicals and their difficulties, I tell you.
We were testing the emergency broadcast system. You know how it is. Every once in a while, you got to get those beeps in. Yeah. All right. Are you guys ready for some juicy, delicious lore this evening?
Absolutely. What do we got?
Well, we're going to go and start hopping around the world again, I think. And what better place to start than the UCOS and the capital of the UCOS, the Federal District of Columbia. Or the DC Metro, or just
my
good
favorite.
Old DC.
They kept the name.
It is referred to as DC, yes.
Oh, see. Real original.
They didn't want to confuse people.
That's fair.
I think so.
Does the hold on. Maybe I don't know the structure. This podcast is really gonna throw out how much lore I don't know.
See, that's why you're here, right?
That's true. The possible president of the UCOS or whoever leads it, are they or leaders? I don't know if they have like a group of people. Are they still in the DC area?
They are still in the DC area. All great questions as well, because we will get to who actually runs the DC Metroplex as opposed to the governing body of the UCOS, because they are technically different.
Spoilers, of course. It's probably shadowy organizations.
I mean, is it spoilers at this point, or is it just expected?
No, it's just factual at this point.
So I guess we'll do a little lore dump here from back in the day. We won't do actual history, as you can just go look that up by yourself, because it follows regular history all the way up to a certain point, and then things deviate. For this point, we're going to be looking starting at 2024, and the economy of the intersection of Delaware, Maryland, and Virginia was completely dominated by the business, quote unquote, of government and the private industry that was attached to it. Local governments have a hard time keeping up with the demand for services. So in an attempt to impose some order on the crazy quiet of compelling local authorities, the federal government negotiated an agreement with the state governments of Maryland and Virginia that resulted in the Federal Capital District Act of 2024. This basically extended the boundaries of the District of Columbia to include Montgomery, Prince George, and Howard counties in Maryland and Arlington, Alexandria, and Fairfax counties in Virginia. So basically the greater metro DC area that we know today just becomes the capital district, the federal capital district.
Huh.
Is it recognized as a state or as its own? Do states even exist technically in the sixth world at this point?
Yes, states still technically exist.
Okay.
Yeah. But basically take the idea of what we know of today as the District of Columbia, as DC, mm-hmm. and expand it out to cover that area.
Good Lord, that's big.
Yeah, so that area now no longer belongs to the states of Maryland and Virginia. It is now its own, like, autonomous government area.
But they still don't get to be a state.
They still don't get to be a state, no. However, tax revenue lost by the two states was to be made up by increased allocation of federal tax monies to their budgets. So they were supposed to get tax breaks because they ceded the land over to the District of Columbia.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure that was worth it.
Of course.
Those had to be some pretty good tax breaks. I mean, that's like a lot of space to just lose.
That tax break better be you don't pay taxes, because otherwise that's a lot of land to just give up.
Yeah, and considering how rich it already was, because mm-hmm. you have to think most of the people are already living in the area to commute into DC.
Yep.
And now they're just in it.
I mean, I'm sure that it was great for the real estate market.
Oh, probably. After this happens, it does colloquially become known as DC. Like, they just call it DC. They don't call it the new federated jurisdiction District of Columbia or District of Columbia. It's just referred to as DC.
Huh.
Well, NFDDC just doesn't sound as good.
It doesn't.
It's a bit of a mouthful, right? Yeah.
Yeah. We got to watch our acronyms.
Yeah, if we're sticklers for one thing on this podcast, it is making sure that our acronyms are appropriate.
I mean, that's kind of true with what we've done so far.
NFDDC? No. No. NFDD's nuts.
Wow.
Was DC an NFT before NFTs were cool?
No. I feel like now we're approaching into how much wood could a woodchuck chuck territory. This is sweet.
That's what we're getting too close to. All right, let's steer clear of that. So when the United States of America was restructured into the United Canadian and American States, DC continues as the capital of that new nation.
Hmm.
Then in 2033, we have the Treaty of Richmond, which involved the northern part of Virginia. While a second civil war seemed unlikely, the president and Congress did not want the safety of DC dependent on the goodwill of Atlanta. Accordingly, part of Virginia remained UCOS territory and was admitted to the UCOS as the state of North Virginia. So not only is there a West Virginia, there is now a North and South Virginia.
That just seems a little unnecessary at this point.
But only one of them still looks like a pineapple, so.
True. This buffer zone is the portion of the state north of Rappahannock River, Fredericksburg, straddling the river on I-95, became the capital of Northern Virginia. Legitimate and black market goods moving between the COS and UCOS change hands around the clock in this bustling border city.
Yeah, it kind of feels like North Virginia is just a DMZ, right? Between the COS and the UCOS.
Kind of, because they didn't want it to be like it was during the First American Civil War. where Virginia sides with the South and everything, and that puts them ridiculously close to
the capital.
The capital of DC. So in wanting to avoid that, they come up with that Treaty of Richmond. So that it gives it that buffer zone. So it basically just splits the state of Virginia. So now Virginia is in three parts instead of two.
Why is Virginia so okay with this? Like,
did they really have a choice if you think about it?
I guess that's fair. When, yeah, all right, that's a good point.
I'm sure Virginia itself was probably divided on what side it wanted to go to, either to the UCOS or the COS when that was coming around.
Something about aforementioned tax breaks and whatnot, I'm sure, is I bet that helped.
Of course. Oh, Karma, you had asked who's in charge of this lovely federated district, and we're going to get into that right now. The FDC, Federated District of Columbia, has an interlocking system of federally appointed rulers and locally elected officials.
Okay.
Each is ultimately accountable to the president and Congress, but the entirety is obscured by a set of bureaucracies of legendary complexity and questionable efficiency. So you think government is bogged down and difficult now? Oh, you just wait. It gets so much worse. So first off, we have the Federal District Chief Commissioner is appointed by the president, becomes subject to confirmation by the House District Committee. Commissioner chairs the Federal District Commission, composed of elected regional commissioners from six divisions of the district and an at-large member. The chief commissioner serves as the tiebreaker. Congress must approve most decisions made by the commission. And then each regional commissioner heads his or her regional government, which provides and coordinates for residents the services that city and county governments supply in other jurisdictions. To make it a little bit easier, you have the president of the United States, or the president of the UCOS, right? Under the president of the UCOS, they can appoint the federal capital chief commissioner, who will basically run the day-to-day of the DC greater Metroplex area.
So they're the mayor.
Basically, yeah. They'd be the mayor. Then, of course, under the president of the UCOS, you've got the attorney general and all of that line, right? And then under the federal capital chief commissioner, you have the different commissioners of each district within the Metroplex. So like each individual, like we did in Seattle, with each individual mayor running a district, that's what these other regional commissioners would be.
Okay.
So you can see how government has become more bloated in the sixth world.
Just a little bit, just a tad.
Instead of it being a ladder, it's just a tree, but then that tree's been cut down and like picked up and thrown in a completely separate location.
Yes. And then Congress still gets to kind of vote on what the commission is capable of doing anyway.
Nah, that sounds like Congress.
So there's always that. Good to know, right? The one at time of, I mean, for a time frame of this would be back in like the early 2050s. You have Patrick Erickson as the federal capital chief commissioner. I'm pretty sure that Erickson later becomes president. What else do we have? We have the major airports of the DC area, obviously. The big three being Ike, BWI, and Tommy.
Those are strangely unprofessional names for airports.
Right? Those are very normal, casual names.
Crazy, right? Security is nasty at the big airports. The smaller fields scattered around give you better odds on success of smuggling. There's spots where you can bring in a multi-engine jet with zero perspiration, and others where you get maybe a beacon and just enough field to touch down a small copter.
Huh.
Other than that, you have the three big airports.
You just got to really nail that landing, man.
If you want to smuggle in, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
BWI, known as Baltimore Washington International. BWI is located at the northern end of D.C. in Howard. Knight Arant handles security at BWI. However, that could be changing here in once we hit the 2080s, where Ares is currently in the process of moving their headquarters from the UCAS to the COS. I'm not sure if that would change their security contracts or if they'd have to renegotiate.
Yeah, probably not immediately, but yeah, I'd imagine it would be renegotiated once it's up.
You also have to think about the interesting implication from that, too. That means both of the major security suppliers for North America will be located within the COS borders, both Lone Star and Ares. So that's interesting.
I don't see how that could cause any potential problems at all.
No,
probably not. No, definitely
nothing.
Not.
Nothing bad can come from this. Anyway, the other three or the other two big airports in DC, you have Ike, which is the Eisenhower International. It was formerly Dulles International in the western end of Fairfax. This is covered by the own federal police.
Oh, so wait, they have their own police force?
Yes, they have their own police force.
Okay.
The federal police, also known as FedPols.
FedPols, that's a nice name. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Apparently, FedPols carry heavy heat.
Oh, so they're just Lone Star. Okay.
And then finally, you have Tommy Airport, which opened in 2040. The Thomas Jefferson International is just south of the district boundaries in North Virginia off of I-95. Getting around DC, you have the local air traffic, which means that you could rent a helicopter, VTOL, small aircraft to hop about, ranging in prices depending on how far you have to go. There is a government zone of airspace for local air traffic that has incredible traffic control. Its major enforcement is over the G zone, government zone. They have orders to shoot first and radio for ID later.
Wow, that's
so. If you fly,
interesting choice.
If you fly into the G zone and you're transponders aren't transmitting the correct frequencies, be ready for missile lock.
That's an interesting choice.
Yeah.
So are you trying to say that if you enter the G zone without permission,
mm-hmm.
you're going to have an unpleasurable experience?
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Okay, interesting.
You also have the trains that run into the DC area. There's the Union Station is in the government zone, a couple of blocks from Capitol Hill. Again, the government zone is best known as being the original DC. That's technically the government zone. So what we know of today, currently, as the DC area, that would be the G zone.
Oh wow! So just the entire area, you just pretty much can't fly over.
It's a no-fly zone.
Wow, that is.
Well, you can.
Convenient.
You can fly over it if you have the correct codes and permissions, and you're logged in for air traffic control. Otherwise, oops. There are both long-haul and commuter rail trains that run from this combination terminal / mega mall, which is Union Station. The station has FedPol security rivaling the airports since the bombings of 2035. But the station, it can be great for runners moving legally because it connects to Metro. There's chopper service that's available from a rooftop pad, but is covered by the G-Zone air security blanket. Unscheduled departures make few arrivals. Other areas of DC are served by light rail, fast, clean, and electric. Then there's ground traffic if you're not taking the trains. You can use Interstates 95, 70, and 66, plus a lot of smaller highways to drive into DC. You can roll in on a superhighway or take back roads that are barely more than plowed ground. If you're running up from the costs and want to give DC a miss, then I-795 East and West bypasses are available. The most vulnerable spots for running through DC are the 6 bridges across the Potomac River. The Fed poles can set up checkpoints on any or all of these with zero preparation. Typical checkpoints have a squad car with 2 Fed poles standing by for pursuit and another 2 or 3 scoping the cars as they come through, checking ID and possibly conducting searches. Obviously, daytime travel means heavy traffic on most major roads. You can move 25 to 50% faster outside of rush hour. Speed limits around DC are 100 kph on the highway and around 70 kph on the side streets. You also have the waterways in DC. It's not as big of a water town as Seattle is, but you do have Chesapeake Bay. Another increased pollution wiped out the bay's fishing and oyster industries. A lot of local fishing families turn to smuggling. A lot of them run low signature boats carrying contraband from the costs and offshore pickups. Then you also have the Potomac River that runs through high rent and government controlled areas where the odds of observation and challenge are high. Go figure. Basically, if it goes through the G zone, you're going to be monitored.
Yeah.
You have public transportation within the District of Columbia. You've got the DC Metro subway system that grew over the last century to cover the entire sprawl.
Oh, wow. That's impressive.
So it's probably something that is equal to what current day New York would be.
Jeez.
Subway wise. Trains run round the clock, departing every 5 minutes during rush hour. Tickets are 10 New Yen. Off-rush tickets are 5 New Yen. And trains run 10 minutes apart, except from midnight to 4 in the morning, when they run 20 minutes. Stations are patrolled at the same enforcement levels as neighborhoods in which they are located. You can feel real secure in a government zone station with certified cred sticks hanging out of every pocket. But in some of the stations in Prince George's and Anacostia, safety is what you carry in your holster. Then you have bus and taxi services, obviously. That's what we do to get around in the DC area. The government zone being the worst. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so I don't know if it talks about it at all. So there are 2 police forces, because Knight Errant and then the Fed poles are both operational in this area, right?
Yes.
How does it explain how, like, do they work together? Are they competing forces?
They're 2 separate entities. The Fed pole generally runs the security for the G zone.
Oh,
and then
okay.
Everything outside the G zone falls to Knight Errant security. Yeah.
Okay. That makes more sense. Okay.
Yeah. They don't like to share district.
Understandably.
Yeah. They don't play well together, to say the least. It'd be like Lone Star and Knight Errant trying to run the same beats. If you're looking for good times, in the DC area. Say you finished your run. What's next? Well, there's the high end. These places are for the well-heeled who walk in the sunlight or the shadows, but don't even walk by any place on this list unless you can put your cred stick on auto fire for the evening. It's expensive. We have Alistair's, a nightclub. Alistair's is currently at the top of the heap of the clubs that come and go in Georgetown. Macro Flash and Mucho Dinero are the entry requirements. A taste for synth booze at premium prices also makes your evening easier. But the sounds make up for a multitude of how terrible this place can be. The manager of this club has managed to get club dates from all the best and brightest of the music industry, including Maria Mercurial and Savage Spirit, two very well-known music artists in the biz. But you've got to have the new yen to be able to get in.
Mm-hmm.
Our next stop is Kingdom 7. It's no Dante's, but it is a two-floor nightclub.
With ooh, a whole two floors.
With an attached large restaurant. But wait, there's more. Also, there's a casino.
Okay, all right. Never mind. I'll shut up.
In the top seven floors of the 80-story Columbia Tower, there's a glittering den of vice unrivaled by a single smidgen of taste. Food is overcooked and overspiced to blandness, and the nightclub acts guarantee that even the terminally dull will be pleading for mercy in minutes. All this in a setting that makes old Las Vegas look like the epitome of elegance and refinement.
So is it intentionally crappy, or is it...
Yeah, is that like their shtick? Like, yeah, how are they so big if they're just garbage?
Yeah.
Well, this is why. This is why.
Okay.
It's because they have managed to open the only legal casino in the sprawl in plain sight.
Okay.
So they spit in your food, but you're like, thank you. I actually just needed more chips for the craps table. But...
Yes, yes. But this extra spit actually adds flavor.
A little seasoning on top is always appreciated.
Mm-hmm. Strictly speaking, you are on Kingdom 7 soil as soon as you set foot in the Columbia Tower. The whole tower is extraterritorial. Because Kingdom 7 Enterprises is hardly in the same league as the companies that usually pull this off, the rumor mill constantly churns out delicate little guesses as to who pays the bills, especially with a casino that operates within the DC area. So it's glitz and glam and varnish, but you're there to gamble, not for the nightlife or the food. If that doesn't get you excited, then how about Nexus, the charming little catacomb? Nexus is under DuPont Circle, extending out from assorted abandoned steam pipes and the old streetcar tunnels into a series of chambers where the elite can shadow meet. 10 seconds after you leave, no one remembers that you've been there, and the interior surveillance countermeasures are maintained by the most paranoid techies in captivity. The place is run by a Mr. Stone who acts as maitre d' slash bouncer slash freelancer and also has a freelance SWAT team.
Oh.
Imposing even for a troll, Mr. Stone is rumored to be a veteran of many Germanic states' brush fire wars. So if you've got shady business to do, Nexus is where you want to meet up. There's your high-end joints. Now we've got to talk low end. There are hundreds of spots around DC where you can get a nice little meal or a few hours boozing time for a reasonable price. They're all very much alike. However, these are the ones that stand out. Blues Haven, a nightclub and bar. Jazz is the name of the game, the best in town. That's what it's known for. You've got Circle Hands, a mid-sized restaurant and bar. Circle Hands gets its name from the Native American sign language gesture meaning all of us. It is a strangely peaceful place tucked into the middle of a dozen acres of woodland near the border between Fairfax and Northern Virginia. An underdeveloped part of the sprawl.
Huh.
It is a favored watering hole for the shamans among the shadows. Don't go expecting the clientele to exhaust themselves putting on little shows for the mundanes. Most magicians' clubs have no patience with such goings on. Don't mess with the shamans. Thunderheads is a nightclub, a rock club where you get more than the usual dreary wannabe band synthing the top 10 songs through their consoles. The owner only books those who play, sing, or synth music they have written themselves.
Hmm.
The result is an awful lot of weird music and a lot of young musicians worth hearing. Thunderheads is on the northern fringes of the Anacostia Barrens near the Benning Road metro station. Finally, on the low end, we have Warzone. Warzone is a nightclub and mid-sized restaurant. This place is danger to the max. This club in Shaw is favored by the type A personalities among DC's samurai population. Most nights, the atmosphere is simply palpable mix of buzz, adrenaline, and whatever high-tension kill music the band is cranking out. If you're one of those people who's worried about losing your precious edge, then you should drop by Warzone. They're your kind of people.
It's DC's Waffle House, from what I'm hearing.
It's where all of the strongest combatants gather.
Yeah, precisely.
Two men enter, one man leave.
Two men waffle, one man house.
Finally, we have our list of the leftovers. This is for when you have no money at all. You could go to Chainsaw. I swear I'm not making this up. Which is a nightclub. Chainsaw features a very picky post-industrial decor that it's in an old warehouse in a Mount Rainier neighborhood. That's the best description of it. When crime in the area started to go ballistic, the residents took up a collection to maintain a group of samurai to keep their streets safe. The samurai took over this site as a headquarters / hangout, and it grew from there. Would-be samurai or established fighters down on their luck can see about joining up with these protectors of this area. The bands at Chainsaw are rarely famous and even more rarely skilled. They are, however, very loud. You've got The Pit, a casino and nightclub. In the middle of the Anacostia Barrens sits The Pit. It boasts nightly fights. And honest ones at that. Categories include augmented and non-augmented, and armed and unarmed, with bouts that theoretically fight on points. The management, whoever they might be, does keep some decent biotechs on hand, keeping fatalities to only a couple per week.
Impressive. Good for them.
The fighting purses are low, only around 1,000 New Yen, but the betting runs in the hundreds of thousands each night. If you like cheap Nutrisoy and raw synth, you can load up for a few Nguyen. Contestants eat free. So if you're really down on your luck and you need to make some money or are just looking for a meal, sign up for legal bum fights at the pit.
It gets the job done.
I guess it does. So you were asking about the Fed polls earlier and kind of how they come about. So I have that for you.
Okay.
When the first virus fried computers back in 29, the job it did on food, power, and comm turned DC into a collapse, a horror story. Whole zones got pounded into rubble. DC was a compact war zone from mid-2029 until 2031. The local cops folded early. They weren't set up for that kind of threat. The army cordoned off the G zone and pushed control back out from there. That's when they built the barriers around the White House and Capitol. In 31, the UCAS Congress set up the Fed polls to keep DC supplied with protection. The Federal Capitol Police run the law and order show for the whole sprawl. A lot of zones keep private security on tap, so they're not the only police outfit there. But the Fed polls have jurisdiction everywhere in DC. No other organization operates without their say-so. A Fed poll liaison watches all the cop shops and rent-a-guards in the sprawl. He can shut them down at any time he wants if he decides they are not maintaining the standards set by the chief of Fed poll. In the government zone, the Fed polls are the only local law enforcement. But remember, you have the Secret Service, the FBI, and other spooks running around loose down there as well. About the only turf in DC the Fed polls can't get into anytime they want is the extraterritoriality corporate and diplomatic enclaves because they're sovereign soil. Even the Fed polls have to be invited into these places. Outside the zones on the Fed polls beat are the private police companies. Knight Arant Security is currently the leader of the pack, with Lone Star running a close second. Working the better off neighborhoods, UCAS Pro is a local operation. That's UCAS Protective Services, also known as UCAS Pro. I wonder what you have to pay for Ultra. As in other sprawls, poorer zones either do without or hire local gangs to cover their turf. In a lot of those locations, the local gangers are the only protection. There is also the National Guard and the Urban Militia. Congress are not too excited about the Urban Militia in DC. Too many citizens with guns seems to make them nervous. The militia is only allowed in zones full of nice, trustworthy salarymen, so the places that need extra protection the least are where it's at. The militia are part of the FDC National Guard. The Guard is outside the Fed poll chain of command, receiving their orders directly from Chief Commissioner, which would be in the 2050s, would be Erickson, like we said. This means that the Fed polls and the Guard have a lot of jurisdiction fights, particularly when dealing with civil disorders. So there you go. The National Guard for DC is different than the Fed poll police force.
Good Lord.
Which causes even further jurisdictional problems.
I wonder what like the crime rate is with kind of like a bunch of just different police forces. It has to be not as bad, at least not in the slums. I imagine it's probably equivalent to the barons, most likely.
Most likely, yes.
But anywhere close to, like, well, definitely not in the G zone, but like in that closer area.
Yes.
I mean, Madison, it has to be like a pretty okay area to live.
I would hope so.
Well, I mean, yeah, I think we would all hope so, but I would hope Seattle isn't constantly under threat, but you know.
Well, you know. For major organized crime, you have both the Mafia and the Yakuza.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. DC has two Mafia operations in town. Victor Marconi, a fifth-generation mafioso, currently age 52. This is back in 2050, so he's most likely succeeded by now into the 2080s. But at the time, he proclaimed himself as the ambassador for the Cosa Nostra. This is great. He fronts as a big deal lobbyist.
I mean, what better way to make sure that your business is unaffected than by paying for the people to get into power that make sure that your business doesn't get affected?
Right. Yeah. Marconi is not the working Don of DC. He's the top go-between for the Comisión and the UCAS government, not necessarily a mobster. The Mafia crime boss in the sprawl is Franco Mueller. Don Franco came to power in DC 20 years ago, so in the 2030s. His boss took his finger off the number and got nailed by a bunch of yaks. Mueller impressed the Comisión, who gave him financial assistance and the go-ahead to rebuild Mafia operations in DC. He becomes a member of the Comisión in 2043. In DC, the Mafia controls numbers running and other gambling, loan sharking, vice, and drugs, including Beatles. They concentrate on Montgomery and Washington, but also operate regimes in other regions. Mueller is not subtle. Gang wars in the town sound like instant replays of the good old days in Chicago. There's only one rule: no wet work allowed in Fed poll zones. So basically, stay out of the G zone. Other than that, you can do whatever you want. That's Mafia. Then, of course, we have the Yakuza. DC has seven active Yakuza organizations.
Oh.
Yeah. Four of them are typical Yakuza operations: the Matsugumi, the Fudo Rengo, the Sesshogumi, and the Chong Pak Pa. I believe the Chong Pak Pa eventually get removed in around the 2060s because they're primarily made up of Koreans. And the Yakuza at one point went on a cleansing mission to get rid of a lot of them and thus created the Sulphur Rings. So I'm guessing that the Chong Pak Pa eventually get outed, and if they survive the cleansing, then they will have remade as a Sulphur Ring in the area. The Mizugumo Rengo, otherwise known as the Water Spider League, operate in DC and specialize in industrial espionage and other operations in the realm of corporate subversion. What an interesting Yakuza gang to operate in DC.
Yeah, that's something.
To have seven different ones too, like,
geez. That's a lot. I feel like it should just combine some, probably.
Especially, well, especially over on the East Coast. Right?
Hey, Chummer, just a quick aside. If you are enjoying the episode, be sure to rate it if on audio, or if you are on YouTube, give us a like and subscribe as we are trying to reach our 1,000 subs goal. You can also support us over on Patreon at patreon.com/critical_hits. Finally, if you are interested in taking your tabletop gaming to the next level, check out the episode description for an affiliate link to DriveThruRPG. So the next time you're looking to expand your library and want to help support us, drop that link in. And now, back to the show.
I know you're interested in hearing about the DC gangs, right?
Obviously, yeah.
Each region has one or more major gangs that can put more than 100 guns on the street. Some with mil-spec. Gang politics make the G-Zone look tame. Treaties come and go every week. Gangs that were sworn blood brothers last month are now out on the concrete slicing and dicing each other. And next month, they'll be back slinging that synth down their gullets. So here are the backgrounds on the big gangs. These are usually the ones that can contend with the other big players in the area, namely the Mafia and the Yakuza. We've got the Halfies, a go gang with mixed membership. Their leader is named Mace, an orc with heavy cyber mods. Their colors are skin job. The face is done in black and white. The pattern is up to the individual ganger. Their turf is I-295 right through the middle of Anacostia, Washington. It's weird that you have to paint your face in black and white, but it can be any kind of pattern you want it to be.
Yeah, that's an interesting decision.
I mean, for a go gang, too. Next on the list, we've got the Princes of the Blood. I'll give you one guess. One guess of what their meta type is.
Probably human, I feel like.
No, sorry. If you would have said elf, you would have been correct.
Dang it.
Princes of the Blood, an all-elf gang. The princes are trying to move up to the big times. They distribute about 15% of the beetles and other controlled substances in the DC area. They take a cut on the joy folk action in several areas, either running strings directly or skimming a piece of the take from the pimps who are working those areas. The princes also do flat out extortion. They call it protection, but you won't see a shop showing prince colors to keep the other goons away, as the princes don't actually care what happens to them as long as they get their cred each week. Their colors are red, black, and silver. For allies, they keep a few rich kid thrill gangs full of elf wannabes on their leash. Their turf runs into Montgomery, but the princes have half a dozen small hangouts all across the DC sprawl. Good for them. Next, we have Probe.
Oh.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Probe is mixed racial membership. Almost all are deckers, riggers, or some form of tech wannabe. Probe are techno-fetishist terrorists.
Of course.
Doing Matrix black magic to push a neo-data anarchy kick. They supply most of the street cyber in the sprawl. Probe are big on the group mind of the Matrix. One probe are all probe, they say. Using the signature to refer to a probe is a quick invite for a cyber strike on your bank account. Or some esoteric neurotoxin in your soy calf.
Delicious.
Their colors are dazzle suits made of Neolux fiber capable of 5,000 candle power of mind-blowing patterns. Have you ever wanted to see someone wear so much neon? Their turf is no affixed abode. Mostly decentralized, they sometimes claim the DC Matrix as their turf.
Mm.
You can only imagine that when Technomancers emerged, that their numbers grew. We have the Sables. The Sables have a mixed membership of normies and meta. But all members are of African American descent. They started as a typical street corner gang in the middle of the Anacostia Barrens. As the Barrens slid to the bottom of the old socioeconomic food chain, the Sables started moving to the top. They don't exactly run the Barrens, but no other gang there can take them on single-handedly and survive. The Sables run drugs, gambling, and protection, and their protection is for real. They don't just extort you for money. They'll actually protect your business. Their colors are black and green with a gold lion's head patch.
Ooh.
Their turf is the Anacostia Barrens, obviously. And they don't take well to any of the other Anacostia gangs who don't consider them allies. Let's see, you've got Thundercross. For normals only, and I mean only. They are young anti-meta fascists who wear urban camo, have buzz cuts, and moderate cyber mods. Mostly rich kids from Northwest, these gangers have access to surplused militia weapons. Rumor has it that Thundercross is backed by Humanus. Hunting metas, not a crime, is their thing. Though some profitable arson recently in poor zones may have been their work. The buildings burned were mostly meta squatters. Their colors are black, gray, and white urban camo with a patch or badge of a cross shooting lightning. These guys sound wonderful. To no one's surprise at all, they consider the princes of the blood and the Howlflies to be their enemies. Who would have guessed the two meta gangs? Their turf is the Upper Northwest in Washington. Wonderful, because you need a Humanus gang wherever you are.
Yeah, obviously.
Every sprawl has to have one. You have the Triples. This is actually an alliance between three gangs. The Rebels, a go gang, human go gang from Fairfax. The Brick Hogs, an orc troll go gang. And the Moccasins.
Mm.
Moccasins are a mixed race, water based go gang. What? All I'm seeing is jet skis. So many jet skis.
Yeah, that's interesting. And doesn't seem good.
Right? And all of their members are from waterman families on the river and Chesapeake Bay.
Mm.
The Triples have smuggling routes running from the bay up the US 301 or I-95 corridors from the COS. They also dabble in hijacking.
Makes sense.
Of course. Their colors. Oh, you're going to love this. Too bad that Tyler isn't here for this. They run the COS flag colors.
Yeah.
If you're the Rebels, you run the COS flag colors. The Brick Hogs run red, brown, and green. And the Moccasins run blue and copper.
Mm.
Such a weird, it, two go gangs, or all three are go gangs, and one is water based.
Yeah, that's really weird.
That's really, really, really weird. Finally, you have the turkeys. The turkeys is an all orc troll only gang. Pretty standard street gang in Northeast Washington. They sell a lot of vice and drugs to the nice boys and girls at the university. The gang is rumored to run the fastest chop shop on the East Coast. A stolen car can be parts before it finishes rolling into the door. Their colors are red and gray. Their turf is the Northeast. In Washington, I don't know why they call themselves the turkeys. I don't have for you. I'm so sorry.
It's just cool, you know?
I guess.
I mean, can we also just create the canon here that they like wear zoot suits and maybe they're, you know, because they're like jive turkeys, right?
My God.
Don't be no jive turkey.
I mean, the only thing that would be more intimidating than an orc gang coming at you is an orc gang swinging their pocket chains wearing large rimmed hats in the middle of the night.
I was going to say, maybe they wear the big like feather dress behind them, like a flared out turkey feathers, you know? And orange boots. I don't know.
Oh gosh.
Or the since they wear red and gray, maybe they have the red bandanas, but they only specifically wear them under their neck.
Oh, like
under their chin. So.
Oh gosh.
They gobble at you as they approach.
You can hear them coming before you see them. Fear the gobble in the night.
Wait a minute, what was that? We gotta get out of here, it's not safe.
Oh goodness,
here they come. I mean, if they're the turkey super soldiers like from Rick and Morty episode, then I can understand. There is a prison system that operates within the DC area. Big surprise. If you get caught by the Fed poll, you'll be brought into their regional HQ. You can only be held in their pens for 24 to 48 hours, after which you get transferred to the FDC jail complex in Northeast. It was built in 2027 and expanded on several occasions since then. This dump of a prison is a tad overcrowded. Only 5 inmates to a cell.
Gosh.
Only.
Only. Only.
Yeah, I mean, those are rookie numbers.
You will abide in this enchanted little hideaway until trial. And if you receive a short haul sentence or minimum security time, you'll probably stay there afterward. The big house proper is in Lorton, long before the sprawl was the true blue, one and only FDC. This was the city prison. Congress took over Fairfax as part of its land grab in 24 and declared dominion over the whole area around the existing prison. The whole zone is now Slammer City.
Ooh.
Fairfax features minimum security, maximum security, work camps, rehab centers, and death row under guns on the ground and in the air. It's just you and 12,000 of your fellow convicts living in luxurious facilities capable of handling about half that number. The 12th Urban Response Infantry keeps everything nice and cozy. You're not even watched by the Fed polls. You're watched by an Army Corps.
That's... Whew. That's rough. Don't go to prison. Noted.
Mm-hmm. With luck, you'll stay in the DC Slammers if your case has ticked off the big boys sufficiently. You may find yourself hauled off to one of the Omega class hellholes. The feds contracted private, quote, rehabilitation engineering, end quote, corps to run their maximum security prisons, granting them full extraterritorial rights. And doing hard time has never been harder. The average survival rate inside makes 5 years about right for a life sentence.
Wow.
The UCOS has two known Omega sites. Inferno, or the Ex-Urban Reclamation Project, as it is quaintly called in the official records, is an open-air vacation spot in the toxic zones of New Jersey. Leavenworth in Kansas is fitted with all the latest in social readjustment gear, experimental neuromodification labs, cyber monitor implant facilities, row upon row of sensory deprivation units, and a pharmacy boasting most of the behavioral altering substances known to man. There are your two Omega class sites.
Gosh, that's rough, buddy.
Within the UCOS. So not even in DC, but within the UCOS itself. Here is this. So we covered pretty much everything. And we covered law enforcement as well. And the gangs, a couple of the night spots that you can go to. And that Anacostia is basically the Barrens of DC. And the large area that it now covers from what it used to. Mm-hmm. Not much else has changed in the following years from when it was established. Really, the big things that happened were obviously the Treaty of Richmond, which separated Virginia into North and South, creating that buffer zone so that the new FDC doesn't feel the pressure from the cost being that close. What else is interesting here? Arlington National Cemetery, which is in the DC area, does have a background count.
Oh.
Yeah.
How high?
4.
Ooh. Ooh.
I mean, wow. Think of how many people are buried there.
I guess that's a fair point.
So it has a background count of 4.
Goodness.
The other independent agencies and commissions that operate within the DC area, other than the commission and Congress and the acting government, you have the CIA, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency.
Mm-hmm.
There are two other lobby organizations that are also headquartered in the DC area. You have the Mothers of Metahumans, or MOM, and People for the Ethical Treatment of the Awakened. Also, if we're putting Barrens in comparison, the Anacostia Barrens is almost worse off than the Redmond Barrens.
Really? That sucks for them.
They are considered a Z zone. Or they're almost a Z zone, sorry. And for those of you that are wondering, what's a Z zone? It's so far down on the security rating that no security. If you're in a Z zone, there's no security that's coming to help you. There's no law enforcement agency, Lone Star, Nidorant, the Fed Pol, the National Guard. Nobody's coming. You have to fend for yourself. That is officially what a Z zone is. I do have the split of the different districts that are that make up the FDC. You have the Arlington District, the Fairfax District, the Howard District, the Montgomery District, the Prince George District, and the Washington District. We did also mention that within the G zone, the government-controlled zone, where the White House and the Capitol building is, there are actually protective walls and barriers that have been erected around them. They're more like miniature fortresses now. You know, because that's what you need.
Right, yeah, obviously.
Yes. You can't just have people running up and wanting to enter your building now. It doesn't work that way anymore. You have any questions, comments about the Federated District of Columbia?
Sounds like it sucks.
I mean, yeah. Why wouldn't it?
Right. I mean, fair enough, I guess.
True.
Where doesn't, you know, like it, in all of the sixth world?
That's true. Oh, corporate presences. I almost forgot. Obviously, this is super important, right?
Oh, yeah.
The corporate court embassy is located in the FDC. That's obviously within the G zone.
Mm-hmm.
You have the Draco Foundation, Novatech, Shiawase Atomics Global Headquarters is here. You have the Ares macro technology presence, as technology has a presence in FDC.
Hmm.
As does the Zurich Orbital Bank. So there you go. The most important parts that help make up the corporate court are conveniently located in the FDC. Just saying.
It's purely coincidental. You're looking too far into it.
Oh, yeah. I'm definitely reading way too much into it.
Yeah.
Nothing I need to worry about here. I would like a better breakdown of the extraterritorial spaces within the FDC, but I don't have that, unfortunately.
Mm.
Like, it would be nice to know where those zones start within the different districts, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or where those corporate holdings are located. But I don't see that. I don't have that one, unfortunately. Sad.
Yeah, it's tragic.
I know.
Maybe one day.
Maybe one day. We'll see. But yeah, would you ever run the DC Shadows?
Actually, no. That sounds yeah, I don't know, man. That sounds like it's pretty intense over there.
Austin, would you run the DC Shadows?
No. Also, like, to be fair, I feel like the vast majority of the shadow running that has to do, there's probably, like, you know, political espionage stuff.
Oh yeah, a bunch of it.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Boo. Boo on that.
That's boring. I mean,
that's the boring stuff. Everybody knows that.
Need you to break into this building and then fax me the documents.
Well, you will be maybe a little bit interested to know that the political parties by the Sixth World have broken up a little bit.
Oh.
Yeah. By 20, this was based off of the last voter registration in 2048. Here's the breakdown. You had libertarian at 10%, technocrat at 22%,
okay,
arc conservative at 14%, democrat at 22%, and republican at 23%. So if you look at it, a third party has technically risen to be on the same level as the Republican and Democrats, and that's the technocrats.
I mean, good for them, really.
Hey, we're breaking up the two-party system. It only takes the sixth world. How about that? Is there anything else you could think of that I haven't talked about that you'd be interested in knowing about for the DC area? It does talk about, I do have for the UCAS in general, which kind of fits into this, a few amendments that were added into the UCAS constitution.
Oh, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, the first 10 amendments of the U.S. Constitution exist unchanged in the UCAS and are still referred to as the Bill of Rights. Much of their effectiveness has been weakened by recent Supreme Court decisions, however. The other amendments that are of note in the UCAS Constitution are the 11th Amendment, the rights of UCAS citizenship by birth or naturalization are not to be denied to any individual due to race or creed. The 12th and 15th Amendments expanded powers to the state and local, being example being Metroplex governments. The central power of the UCAS government is greatly reduced. The 13th Amendment, UCAS recognizes contracts between corporations and their employees as binding upon due process of law in a contract court. Corporations may extradite persons found guilty of unlawfully breaking their employment contract. How about that?
Yeah, that's that last one's a little rough.
And the 14th Amendment, the so-called Sin Amendment, ratified in 2036, established the system identification number requiring the registration of every UCAS citizen. Individuals residing in the UCAS without SINs are defined as probationary citizens, which sharply limited with sharply limited civil rights. Probationary citizens are not permitted to vote in federal election. Species other than Homo sapiens are eligible for probationary citizenship in UCAS, but full citizenship may be granted to a non-human, non-metahuman only by an act of Congress.
That sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's rough.
That is rough. So those were the interesting developments of the different amendments that take place. But DC overall, it's very much the same that you're seeing nowadays, just with, I'd say, more policing in the government-controlled area. And now it controls a wider area, being a metroplex, as opposed to just a group of government buildings. Final thoughts. What do you got for me?
Sucks. Yeah, that's just rough.
Yeah, that's true. It is very rough.
I find it cool that we have a water-based Go Gang.
That is kind of cool.
Yeah, you would think there would be one in Seattle, but there isn't one that's mentioned.
Well, I think it just becomes, I think the people in Seattle may just be smart enough to realize it's stupid. You know, maybe that's just me. What do I know?
I guess. I mean, for this one, it makes sense because you've got, like they said, you've got the Chesapeake Bay area.
Right.
And the Potomac River. So it's a lot to cover. I mean, it's great for smuggling.
Yeah, that is true. That does seem like another thing that like would be really big is just smuggling runs and stuff like that. But that's kind of boring. So
I'd be interested to hear more about like the tension between the border of the COS and the UCAS.
Yeah.
And like I said, I wonder what Knight Errant moving their official headquarters out of the UCAS into the COS is going to do.
Yeah, that'd be really interesting. Because if they drop that, I mean, pretty much anything outside of the G zone's just screwed. And yeah, at least until Lone Star steps in. But
well, I'm also wondering if that'll upset the balance of power and kind of give the Koss a little bit more legitimacy and sway.
Yeah.
In the coming years. I guess we'll just have to see how it all plays out as timeline marches on. That is something we'll have to cover in a future episode, the moving of the Ares headquarters from Detroit to Atlanta. And with my own web of conspiracy that I believe I have uncovered with that. It's great. I promise it'll be fun. I'll probably work on bringing that one to the forefront. Next, maybe we'll see, but we will be continuing our trip around to other metroplexes. You guys, I know that Denver has been asked about before, and we are going to get to it there. I've just delayed it. I had some things ready to go, but now that the new at the time of this recording, it's brand new, the Falling Point book for the 6th edition has just dropped, which added some new lore and information for the Denver area about things that are happening there. So I have to dive in and read that and get it all situated and squared away so that we can move forward with that Denver episode. It is on the docket. It is being worked on. So don't worry, we will get to it. I promise. I know you guys want to hear more about these areas. And if you're new and just joining us for the first time, welcome. And if you do have questions about the lore or are interested in putting something on our radar to dive into and bring it to you on the podcast, then please feel free to come over and join us on our Discord. We will interact and talk and be ridiculous like we normally are. I promise it's a good time. You guys can come hang out with us. Austin Karma, thank you guys again so much for being a part of this. I appreciate it. Karma, welcome on for the first episode, hopefully of many more to come.
Here's hoping.
Here's hoping. As long as I can keep finding the lore to churn it out for you guys. I'm excited. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode of DC Lore, a look at the DC area. And thank you for listening this long. And as always, you guys, we will catch you in the next one.
The Topps Company, Inc. has sole ownership of the names, logo, artwork, marks, photographs, sound, audio, video, and or any proprietary materials used in connection with the game Shadowrun. The Topps Company, Inc. has granted permission to Critical Hits to use such names, logos, artwork, photographs, sound, audio, video, and or any proprietary materials for promotional and informational purposes on its website, but does not endorse and is not affiliated with Critical Hits in any official capacity whatsoever.